Welcome to Dialogues in Afro-Latinidad, a podcast dedicated to amplifying and elevating Afro-Latinx histories, cultures, and communities across the Americas and beyond. I'm your host, Dr. Michelle Reed Vasquez. Join us for conversations with experts and artists to learn more about Afro-Latinidad. Venga. My guest today is Dr. Edward Arriaga. He is Chair and Associate Professor of Language, Literature, and Culture at Clark University. He develops interdisciplinary research at the intersection of fields such as critical race studies, Afro-Latinx and Afro-Latin American studies, and digital humanities. Professor Arriaga has published extensively in the U.S., Canada, Colombia, and England, and is the author of Afro-Latinx Digital Connections, published in 2021. He's currently writing a book examining the way Afro-Brazilian marginalized communities challenge algorithmic determinism using hybrid and communal digital practices in search of data and social justice. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for the invitation, Michelle. It's a pleasure to be here.
So I know that you're from Bogota, Colombia. So how did you become interested in exploring the experiences of Afro-Latin Americans? What's your journey been like?
Well, that's an interesting question because it's kind of telling the story of my life, right? So, I'm originally from Bogota, but being from Bogota and being Black is a particular experience, because usually people in Colombia and in the mountains where Bogota is located, they think that Black people don't exist here from long time, but actually Black people in Colombia and in Bogota have been here for more than two centuries. But it's that imagination of the widening of a society. What we you need to experience and face as a Black Colombian, as a Black person from Bogota. So when I was studying in Bogota, I got really interested in exploring, in looking at how Black people were facing those challenges. And also what was the story, what were the stories and how what was the history of Black people in Colombia, but also in Latin America, and trying to connect all of those. So that got me interested into exploring that. And then I was teaching at the university in Bogota, and then I had the opportunity to go to Canada to do my PhD. Fortunately, I got connected to a lab to a supervisor who created a lab to analyze cultural productions through digital means. So in that time, the digital humanities were like bombing. I would say it was in 2007 when I was I started my PhD, and I said, okay, this is the perfect opportunity to actually explore use different tools, different methodologies to expand the toolkit that I had when I was just studying cultural productions with pen and paper. And I said, this is the perfect opportunity to understand how the idea of Blackness, the idea of Afro-descendancy in cultural production has been disseminated throughout the Americas. And that was sort of the journey. It was kind of personal, but also intellectual curiosity, trying to understand how these communities become what they are currently. So.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, thank you for sharing that. I want to go back a little bit because there's something you said about Colombians, perhaps particularly in Bogota, saying, oh, there are no Black people here. Mm-hmm. But you are from Bogota and you are obviously of African descent. Yeah. So what I'm just trying to think about, how did that play out in your everyday lived experience growing up if you're already being erased, even though you're actually right there?
Yeah. Well, like I said, it was interesting. I don't remember a particular personal racist experience against me, being discriminated against, not being permitted to enter any places or things like that. But it doesn't mean that, I wasn't erased, because they were questioning my identity as a person from Bogota, mm-hmm. and questioning my origin, mm-hmm. right? So that in itself becomes like a very powerful way to discriminate people and to be racist against, right? Even to this day, I just went to 1 month ago, I went to a city in Colombia called Medellin, which is very popular right now, mm-hmm. and everyone was I was in a cab with the driver talking with the driver, and he said, "Where are you from?" And I told him, "I'm from Bogota, but you should be from other places. You speak with you speak." Like a person from Bogota, but you don't look like a person from Bogota. You should be like from El Chocó or another place, which is very connected to Afro descendancy. So growing up here was very interesting in that sense, that you sort of needed to reclaim your identity. But the good thing is, I also had a lot of friends, black friends in my youth time, and we sort of start to dig different stories, trying to connect to different cultural productions from different parts of the world. Music was very important, so it was. An interesting journey, it sort of defined my interest in what I'm currently studying. And another anecdote that I had as well is when I was really young, probably when I was a kid, probably 5 to 7 years, mm-hmm. My father and my mother used to take me to a prominent street here in Bogota, and I when I saw black people, I always went to them and stopped them and say, "Hey, how are you? I'm black too. How are you doing?" I had like that identity already very sort of prominent into me, right? Even though the context didn't allow you to sort of develop that kind of identity, I believe my family was important into that, right? Into help me to develop that identity, and that pride for being Afro descendant. But my grandmother, she was like, "Wait a minute, you shouldn't do that. You shouldn't stop every black person and tell them that you're proud of being black, because they are not exactly like me, right? So they are not exactly like us. They are different." So it was kind of an interesting situation, because I was trying to sort of connect with black people, but at the same time, that idea of protecting the family from the context, my grandmother was like, no, don't do that. Don't do, try to relate to black people, but not every black people is the kind of people you should relate to. And I was a little kid, so I didn't understand that at the time. So
no, but I mean, these are really powerful memories to kind of think about, what you were doing, or I mean, to remember that from the age of 5, it means that you took notice of that. Yeah. And I also want to get into some of the additional kind of defining elements, especially as you're in college and entering graduate school. Are there professors or classes where you went, "Okay, now this is the path," or Or even professors, I mean, again, there's often professors who'll say that, who'll be dismissive of, you know, of the interest. And so, and I've talked to guests who've had those kinds of distinct situations where that helped for them to solidify their path that they took. And so just curious about, did you have any kind of defining moment or moments like that in your academic career?
Yeah. So when I was doing my master's, so my training is basically in literature and linguistics. So I did my undergrad in linguistics and literature, and then my master's in both linguistics and literature, but a specialization in Latin American literature. And I was doing my master's in an institution which is very traditional here in Colombia. It's called Instituto Caro y Cuervo. And is you know, it was founded by the elite, the you know, from Bogota, and people, the philologic elite, I would say, and of course they sort of had that kind of tradition into their you know, their teaching and their offerings. At the time when I was doing the master's, I was you know, in a class with a professor from France. We had a female professor from France teaching about Latin American literature and Colombian literature particularly, and I was very curious about you know, Black production in Colombian and Latin American literature, and she was very strict in the sense that she didn't pay attention to those productions, because from her perspective there wasn't any production, even though you go back and you see, you know, there is right now, there is a the cultural ministry published an entire collection of Afro-Colombian literature, and you can go back in history and you will, you know, you find big stars publishing, even if they were not recognized at the time, right? So right. That was one experience. And when I was doing my PhD in Canada, one professor who a Canadian professor who was researching about Spain, she was very critical about how people, you know, who had an identity would do research on the production of that particular identity as well. And she sort of mentioned that it was a little bit forbidden from the you know, from an academic perspective. It would lack of objectivity, right? So if you were Black and researching about Black production and Black people, so it was a little bit dismissive. But for me, it was like you know, a waking call to say, okay, I should do this definitely, mm-hmm. right? Because if they are having these perspectives, it doesn't mean that I should follow the perspective they are offering me. I had in mind like you know, this is the path that I would like mm-hmm. to follow, because I want to sort of identify, to recognize, to understand who am I, right, and where I'm coming from, and things like that, and what are the networks that I belong to, right, and it's not only me, but a big community, right, big communities, right. Actually, so
right. Yeah. Well, I'm so glad that you did, that you took that and forged ahead. To do the work that you do. And again, I've heard that so many different ways from colleagues and people who I've interviewed. And it's quite remarkable. But again, we have you know, taken that and used it as fuel to pursue the work that we know that is critically important. Yeah. And to that, I want to talk a little bit about what you're passionate about. I know we talked earlier about, yeah, that you're really passionate about this self-determination for Afro-Latinx communities, and especially the way that they use digital tools. And I'm going to try not to go deep into the digital landscape, but I'm fascinated by it. And I want to hear a bit more about how you were drawn to this area.
Yeah, so again, we need to go a little bit back to my time here in Colombia and then going to Canada. So when I was in Colombia, I was doing research about Colombian literature, trying to focus a little bit more into what kind of what was the place for Black authors in the cultural landscape, in the literary field. And I was doing that again with pen and paper. I had a research group with grad and undergrad students, and we were studying a period from 1990 to 2006. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to sort of map out different proposals and how different authors connect to publishers and networks, actually trying to map out the networks of cultural production. But I didn't have the tools at the time. Mm-hmm. Right. So pen and paper was my basic tool and my training as literary scholar. And then when I went to Canada and I related to the supervisor and to the Culturalplex was the name of the lab, I had the opportunity to learn different tools and different methodologies and ask different questions and look at the data from different perspectives. So I said, okay, I can sort of connect both, right? My passion for studying Afro-Latinx and Afro-descendant communities and their cultural production and methodologies that would sort of illuminate different paths to ask questions about these cultural productions. So that's the moment in which I start asking different questions and sort of studying this cultural production from a different perspective. So that's one stage. I sort of start to develop this stage in which I use, network analysis to analyze how the idea of Afro descendancy sort of disseminated through different groups in Latin America. Mm-hmm. And it was sort of, it was still very mediated by the literary and reading production. Right. Mm-hmm. But as much as I was studying, the more I studied the topic, the more I, start to understand that there is another angle as well, which is how these communities are appropriating the tools. Right. Because you mm-hmm. can analyze, use the production and the communities as objects to be analyzed. Mm-hmm. But one important question that I sort of, encounter through my journey is how these communities are being affected by the tools and how these communities are actually appropriating or using the tools or taking the tools and sort of modifying them and using them to advance their own agendas, right? Mm-hmm. So those are the questions that I start to ask as well, and sort of getting a detour from my initial research, which mm-hmm. was basically studying these cultural objects and looking more at how communities appropriate tools, what kind of productions they create with detailed tools, how they challenge discourses like big data, algorithm determinism, algorithmic determinism, even artificial intelligence, and how close or how far it is those discourses are from the realities these communities live in. So those are sort of the passions that I currently have, and that's what I've been doing. With this book that I'm writing, is trying to look at the productions, of course, but also trying to do a sort of both detailed ethnography, but also interviews and connecting with communities and looking at how they are actually creating something you know, different ways in which alternatives to use digital tools and sort of calling our attention in terms of technology, understanding that technology, you cannot receive technology at face value, right? Because it is a human creation that has a lot of values in it, and usually those values are part of the tradition, and those traditions that have discriminated Afro-Latinx and Afro-descendant communities. So those are sort of the connections, and that's how I came to you know, asking those questions and do develop the research that I'm currently doing.
So I want to ask you if you can you give me a little give us a little example of what that means to take one set of digital tools and transform them to have a different kind of meaning or application for the groups that you've been working with?
Yeah. So for instance, I've been working with, there is this community called Data Labi in Rio de Janeiro. Mm-hmm. And they understand that, so they, and they are located in, most of them are located in the favelas of Rio. Mm-hmm. And they understand that they are being studied by the government, right, or by corporations, and they are presented with data, right? So data about murders, data about mm-hmm. prostitution, data about, you know, the lack of opportunity for favela residents, and mm-hmm. particularly Afro-descendant, Afro-Brazilian favela residents. And then they sort of change the perspective and they say, okay, we can use data to demonstrate that these favelas are more than, you know, prostitution, right. Murders, you know, poverty, and that they are in poverty, of course, but they are inventive as well, and they are, you know, exactly. resilient. One example is they have a project called I don't remember the name right now, but the project is about, you know, garbage collection. So okay. the city has data about garbage collection, and they say, okay, we are really good at collecting garbage in the favela, right? But that's not true. The problem is there is a lot of garbage around the favela, and it's the responsibility of the city to collect that garbage. What people in the favela with this lab did was, okay, what you're going to be doing, they sort of proposed the communities, take a picture with your smartphone and then send it via WhatsApp. And then the lab is going to map out where the garbage is and sort of have accountable the city accountable for the lack of responsiveness for garbage collection. Mm-hmm. So that's one example, right? The other example is there is this community called Rede Mocambos, mm-hmm. and they are quilombolas, so they are Maroon communities in Brazil. And they understand that if they use Facebook, or if they use Google or all these big platforms, they are gonna be given permission, or and they are gonna be given the data to these companies, and they are not gonna be able to handle their memories and you know, even their future. So what they did was create a platform. That they created a network which functions without internet. They sort of built up antennas to create a Wi-Fi network, a local Wi-Fi network that could work with or without internet, but they are always connected to each other. And then they created a platform in which they store memories, they record everything, they take pictures, they, mm-hmm. you know, and those memories, they have their own servers. So they are not giving away their memories to these big companies to, you know, do what they want or to define who they are, right? But they are trying to define who they are by sort of having autonomy, digital autonomy, let's say, right? In terms of having servers, having these platforms, and having connections that are not mediated by the big companies, even communication, local communication companies, or big corporations like Google, Facebook, so on and so forth.
I mean, that sounds like the definition of 21st century digital quinoa. I mean, wow.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
Well, I look forward to hearing for us to all learn more about that project that's going along. But I want to also get into kind of the bigger picture of looking at, especially the way that the digital spaces and digital humanities work, and the way that you think it contributes to the way that we understand transnational communities of Afro-Latinx, whether in the U.S. or in Latin America. Mm-hmm. How do you think your work speaks to that element?
Well, my PhD dissertation was, this idea of trying to map out how different communities, and I particularly focus on the artistic representation, right? So how in different types of art, whether literature, visual arts, how the idea of Afro-descendancy was transmitted from location to location, what connections there were between, Latin American, other locations, even in the entire Americas or Europe or Africa, and how different movements and different networks created networks of communication. So that was a project that I developed in 4 years, and it sort of provided sort of results, basic results. But it's a big project, right? It's something that I would like to continue working on and connecting with different scholars. So we can actually try to understand how that dissemination, how that connection happened, and who is connected to whom, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if we take it, and that's my perspective from the digital humanities, if we take advantage of digital tools that allow you to map out or to understand patterns or to quantify connections, that would give us a perspective to ask different questions. I'm not saying that it will solve all our problems at all. No, I'm not trying to say that. But it will give us like a different perspective, and we can sort of combine. And that's what I've been trying to do: try to combine those perspectives from the digital humanities with more traditional questions from the humanities. Mm-hmm. And I believe that's what we can do in the Afro-Latinx studies, Afro-Latino studies, Afro-Latin American studies, so on and so forth, and try to connect with other fields. I've been in conversations with colleagues. Rupika Rizam is one of them. She's a prominent DH scholar. And she has a very similar project, but with the Anglophone Afro-descendant communities, mm-hmm. right? And they are trying to map out how colonial, post-colonial productions, cultural productions, and particularly in the Caribbean and in the Americas, in North America, are connected, and I could contribute, and we have been talking about how we can contribute from the perspective of Latin America, and how Latin American production is also, Afro-Latin American production is also connected to this, big network of Afro-descendant, mm-hmm. Cultural production. So that's one way in which we can take advantage of digital humanities. To ask questions for the Latinx studies, Afro-Latinx studies, and Afro-Latin American studies as well. So,
absolutely. And so, thinking about those kinds of networks and connections, I'm also wondering, kind of, what do you think are some of the urgent issues that are facing Afro-Latinx communities. Sounds like you're getting some sense of it from our conversation about the Quilombos and the other communities in Brazil. But what has been in that landscape and the work that you've been doing, what do you think are some of the kind of key core issues that need to be addressed? And perhaps, I don't know if they can be addressed digitally, in digital spaces or with digital humanities, but I'll let you answer that question.
Well, there are many, you know, many issues that our communities face right now. And again, the detail doesn't mean that I'm not concerned about those issues. Actually, on the contrary, the detail has allowed me to take a look at you know, at how that idea of detail as a idyllic space is completely wrong, and what comes behind that is all you know, this tradition of discrimination, but also extractivism. Mm. So those are you know, the communities continue to face issues of discrimination, lack of access to, you know, basic you know, basic resources. Mm-hmm. I was you know, when you look at how people can access water, right? For instance, water is continues to be problematic to, you know, a problem for communities, and particularly for our Afro descendant Afro Latinx communities to access. But they are presented with the possibility of accessing digital tools more easily than water or territory, right? So right. Then you start questioning what's going on, right? Why is the digital so prominent and so, you know, disseminated and sort of advertised by governments, corporations, and sort of, you know, put there like easily accessible to communities? But what is more important than the detail, which is the territory or, you know, the water or resources for daily living, is continue to be difficult to access to them, right? Mm-hmm. So those are issues, the political representation as well. Even though we talk about Afro-Latinx culture or Afro-Latin American culture, we need to talk about, you know, a diversity of cultures in this space, in this landscape of identities. Because even if we sort of put all of them in, you know, under an umbrella, there are differences and you know, the problematic representation. Sometimes we only use one token to represent everything, but that is also problematic for those communities. So those are challenges that I believe our communities continue to face, and we need. So for me, particularly, the detail has allowed me again to look at those issues from a different perspective, asking those questions like, you know, access. We talk about a lot of about access, right? Access to internet, access to communication, access to, but what about access to other resources that are really fundamental, right? Access right. to rights, human rights continue to be an issue for these mm-hmm. communities. So
definitely. Yeah, so many things, so many thoughts about that. I'm gonna leave that for now. But I will say, just thinking about what you mentioned earlier about this extraction of data and resources, and how that shows up in terms of actual access to things, or the ability to actually, as you said, kind of the basic rights, the basic mm-hmm. needs. Those remain, those continue to be, as you say, kind of urgent across the board mm-hmm. to address. Yeah. We're nearing the end of our time. And so I wanted to ask you, as I ask everyone, about additional resources. So in addition to your work, which we'll include on our website, what other resources would you recommend to people who are really interested in learning more about what you do, mm-hmm. The communities that you work with? Are there books or films or digital projects that you might that you can recommend, and we'll certainly list all of these on the website as a resource for folks.
There are many different resources, particularly produced by communities, right? So right now, I can tell you several from Brazil, particularly. This Rede Motambos is one of them, and they have like a landscape of different, productions, but also even more importantly, a methodology that you can take and use, adapt to different contexts. There is another podcast like Minas Programan, which is a podcast discussing how Black Latinas and Black Afro-Brazilian women use technology and are reclaiming a space in technology, which is usually a male-dominated field. When we say white male dominated field, it probably conveys a wrong message, but it's a male dominated field with probably white values, and that's one thing that they are trying to analyze through their podcast. In the States, there is this initiative really interested called Caras Lindas, which is a podcast, but also like a space that is socially engaged with actual communities. They have also a podcast, but also a website, and they develop different actions with communities in the States, but also in Latin America. The Afro Latino Project continues to be very valuable, and is at once digital but also connected to discussions about census and the question about race. And in terms of books, I would recommend my Afro Latinx Digital Connections, so that we can start exploring those questions as well. But also, looking at different productions from different colleagues in the field. So those I would say would be my recommendations.
Great. Thank you so much. Thank you for those and for also sharing your journey with us and your insights. And I certainly look forward to hearing more about the work you do in the future. So thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the invitation, and looking forward to listening to your podcast as well.
Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe and hear more episodes of Dialogues in Afro-Latinidad on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and YouTube. And go to michellereedvasquez.com to check out our episode resources and learn more about the Afro-Latinidad Studies Institute.